And welcome to another episode of Nerds Amalgamated. I'm your host this week, Buck. With me, I have the DJ.
Hey, guys.
How are you going?
Oh, I'm ecstatic.
You're ecstatic. Why are you ecstatic?
We finally get some rain after so much heat.
I have to admit, I'm liking the rain. So what else have you been up to?
Working, sleeping, getting ready for Christmas, which reminds me I need to get the tree up before relatives come in and say, where's the Christmas tree?
Oh, well, if they do, they just say, well, wait for you to come over to give me a hand. Where have you been?
Yeah, come on, DJ. Can you really reach the top of the tree by yourself?
Fortunately, I can, actually.
Oh, you've only got a small tree?
Yeah, a small tree.
Well, it shouldn't take long to decorate, then. Considering how short you are, if the tree's, if you've ever reached the top of the tree.
Although, it's such a nightmare to get the to straighten out the lights, you know, how Christmas lights always get tangled up very easily.
Well, you're just not putting them away properly then.
Yeah, there's a bunch of ways you can put them away properly without them going all tangled.
Amateurs. The other voice we can hear there is the Professor.
Hello.
And how are you going this week, Professor?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I feel like I've got to say something dramatic and exciting to make up for the DJ being ecstatic.
To make up for it, or you want to match it?
I want to match it. Like, if I just say I'm having a good day, that's nothing. The DJ is ecstatic.
Well, come on then. Put some effort into it.
I am Magna Florius.
Well, there you go. And why are you Magna Florius? Apart from trying to keep up with the DJ.
Well, just because I'm having a good day and I don't want to have just a boring word.
That's okay, I can understand that. Well then, you been up to anything exciting?
Not a lot. Being lazy.
Hey, it's that time of the year, guys. Christmas is coming.
It's been too hot to be outside, so I've mostly just been inside working on my projects.
Yeah, I'll say that in the middle of winter. It's too hot to be outside.
I reckon we should ask the penguins if we can move in.
There's too many people outside. You go outside and there's all these weirdos wandering around.
It's the school holidays.
No. It's just people in general. You have to be polite to them and say hello, which is a bad one if your parents.
Oh, yeah.
And you just walk out and it's early in the morning, you just like, don't want to talk. You haven't had your cup of tea or coffee and it's just, they're there happy and cheery. You're like, hello. And you're just like, But anyway, let's move on. What's the first topic for this week? It's the DJ. What have you got for us, DJ?
Hang on.
I've just given you this huge build up. Don't come in half hearted.
You are the lofty of our group. We're all like, yeah, we can fix it. You're just like, yeah, guess so.
You're Eeyore.
The difference is Eeyore's loved.
Ah, oh, thanks for the love, fellas.
No, sure that's a DJ. Difference.
I think the DJ's loved.
So anyways, guys, so at this event, which is the C21 content in London, Stolen Pictures, which is a production company founded by Simon Pegg and Nick Frost, together with CEO Miles Kentley on Tuesday, we're talking about the creative processes. And Simon Pegg came out saying that theatrical cinema, sadly, appears to be dying, while TV, on the other hand, is being really, really fertile creative ground and is no longer the poor cousin of film and providing a cinematic and exciting playground.
Yeah, but would you say that's because the movies are made on such a thin margin?
I bloody knew it was going to happen. I wasn't going to say it, but I knew you were going to do it.
It had to be said.
I don't know. Movies have been cut. Yeah, well, the superhero movies have been kind of getting bland lately.
Only lately?
Well, Wonder Woman trailer just came out.
Hang on. Don't pick on Wonder Woman.
In 10 years, we've had 23 extremely similar Marvel movies. How many extremely similar DC movies?
Actually, none of the DC movies are really similar. They're all different.
You're right. There's a lot more variety in DC than there is in Marvel. But you think it's only just getting stale?
Well, after Endgame, it just kind of goes, okay, the big bad guy's gone, so who do we have left?
Well, it's the whole Marvel universe. There's more than one bad guy.
That's true, yeah.
They still got, was it Galacticus?
Yeah, Galactus.
Hopefully the next one's a better bad guy.
Yeah, but there's so much money comes out of those superhero movies, though. Wouldn't you agree?
No. There's not. Oh, yeah. There's not such a thin margin.
Thin margins.
Didn't you hear the CEO of Disney? The poor man is starving. He's had to sell his 17th holiday mansion. He's had to cut back to only one Rolls Royce.
He's had to let his mistress go. Now, to be clear to Disney's lawyers, I don't know if he has a mistress or not, but I bet he's cut back if he did, because he can't afford to have many mistresses on slim margins.
So, actually, Peg also notices that as well. So he's saying, like, Peg mentioned that the big studios often rely on big budget superheroes to succeed. Meanwhile, there is this burst of creative excitement in TV, and anything seems possible. And it continues on to say, what used to be this little poor cousin of auspicious silver screen is now dominating it and kind of offering so much more.
So can you give us a synopsis of that instead of just reading it to us?
So he's basically saying that, yeah, okay, big studios are relying on superhero movies, and TV, on the other hand, it's fertile with creativity. And what people always hate TV as, like, the movie-worth cousin, they're saying, going, okay, TV's doing much more better than movies now. We should go back to the TVs.
I really feel like you just said the same thing with different words.
Yeah, I did.
Not less words, different words.
But the point being, he's trying to say is TV is getting better.
Duh. All the best things are on TV.
Well, I was going to say that TV's actually constantly had a fairly solid level for a long time. It kind of dipped with a lot of the stuff from America, just when they were just breaking the sewers and just dragging out lots of stuff. But yeah,
I mean, we recently had Game of Thrones, and that was a pretty good series. It rivaled the movies to a certain degree.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was the most popular show on the planet for a while.
Yeah, until the final season.
I just did a quick look online.
Yeah.
Since 1986, there have been 47 Marvel movies.
Wow.
That's including Howard the Duck and Blade, but also all the X-Men movies. So, yeah, 47 movies since 1986.
But they weren't all in, like, continuity, weren't they? Like, ever since, like, the X-Men before the X-Men movies, they were all just, like, random one-shot movies, though.
Well, no. Blade was as a series, The Punisher 1 and 2, kind of running sequence.
Yeah, I agree with you on Blade. Yeah, that's true, yeah. The Punisher, on the other hand, that was, yeah. Punisher Warzone was not really a sequel. It was just basically a reboot of sorts.
Well, it was considered a secondary because it wasn't a origin story. It was a further along. Like, Fantastic Four was trying to go for becoming a series, but it kind of sucked.
Which one was actually better, first or second?
I'm hoping the third. The cartoon was good. Actually, out of all of these movies, the only ones that I really enjoyed and I want to watch again was Venom.
Oh, yeah.
And Big Hero 6.
Oh, Big Hero 6. That's a good one, too. Have you seen the TV series for that one?
No.
Ah.
But, yeah, there's the link for it. So that's according to IMDb, sorry. So, yes.
Yeah. Well, what do you reckon, guys? Like, would you agree with Simon on the whole TV's becoming better than the movies? Like, with Netflix, for example, I think he's got it right. Netflix being better than the movies at the current stage.
Well, it goes back before Netflix. Like, you had shows such as Burn Notice and Person of Interest, where it was getting up to movie quality action and special effects and things like that, and trying to bring back the level of creativity that they had in shows such as The Man from U.N.C.L.E. and Mission Impossible back in the days, that sort of thing. And they've come out with brilliant stories, and they've developed fantastic series. And, yeah, like was basically a mini movie in every episode.
Yeah, I agree with you there, man.
And that was long before Netflix. Even when you look like shows such as White Collar and some of the others like that, they had such fantastic storylines and content coming through. And then you got the British were doing the same with some of their TV series. Like, I'm probably going to sound like an old doddery fart or something at the moment, but shows such as Time Goes By. But it was brilliantly written and executed.
What about Sherlock?
Sherlock.
The Benedict Cumberbatch.
Yeah, it was Sherlock.
Yeah. What do you reckon of those ones?
Yeah, that was good.
Yeah.
Then you've also had, Keeping Up Appearances?
Oh, yeah, that was good.
Like, TV has had to have a standard to keep going, because if it's garbage, people aren't going to watch it.
Yeah, but then you go and turn on Channel 9 or 10 and see the reality TV getting renewed for another season.
We haven't had a war for a long, long time, so there's a lot more stupid people surviving. And health and safety's gotten too good. Like, you used to have workplace accidents that used to cull out some of the herd in the Darwinian process, and yeah, unfortunately, that hasn't been happening.
Like you get ABC. They're doing this. They do some good Australian TV shows.
Yeah, I didn't say anything about ABC. I said reality TV on Channel 9 and 10.
Yeah, you get
that. ABC does good original Australian TV.
Yeah.
SBS does as well.
Yeah.
Like, I was watching, was it NITV the other day? And they had, I can't know, it was a cooking show where they had, it was a couple of Aboriginal ladies going around doing cooking in different locations. And yeah, just the attitude and the way they're doing it. And then I've actually watched, they got a football show. I actually enjoy watching that because there's less of the blowhards. And it's just more talking about the game and having fun.
You mean the Marnbrook footy show?
That's it. Marnbrook or whatever it is.
Yeah, the Marnbrook.
Like, even watching the Currie Cup or whatever it is, I actually enjoy watching that. Like, I don't enjoy watching much rugby league anymore because they're all a bunch of suki lalas.
Yeah.
But, yeah. So, yeah, I'm sorry, but TV's had to maintain a certain level. And let's not forget, where did reality TV start?
I would say not in the Hollywood big screens, that's for sure.
It was America, from what I can understand.
Yeah, so Simon Pegg was saying now that a lot of supposedly film actors are migrating back to television because that's where the acting is taking place.
Mm-hmm. And there's also more money in it.
Yeah, and at this second age of television, people have a great home viewing setups and choice of TV programming. So, I think he has a point. I mean, movies kind of dying.
Well, movies are also getting ridiculously expensive. It's too expensive to take your family out to the movies these days.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You can buy you can go to Aldi right now and buy a 4K TV for like $500. You can make that back in less than a year if you're going to see a movie with your family every month.
And
plus, so I want to go see a movie with my niece. And to buy two tickets, and this was a student and child, a popcorn and two drinks, it was going to be over $50.
And plus, why waste a lot of money when you can go on Netflix and just watch it at the comfort of your own home?
Exactly. What? There's no people at home.
Yeah. Oh, unless if you want to invite a group of friends in.
No, there's no people at home.
I feel like you're horribly missing the point, DJ.
What's wrong? Like inviting a group of friends and just watching like a show from Netflix, you know, like have like Game of Thrones nights or Daredevil nights, you know.
If you're not going to the movies to stay away from people, why would you want your friends to come over?
Hang on. We're missing a few parts of this here. First, we're assuming the DJ has friends who want to come over to his place. To date, I've never been invited over to his place at all. So I don't know if he actually even has a home.
Yes, I live under the story bridge. Yes, and I...
That explains a lot about your audio quality.
Very funny, man. Very funny. But, yeah, so what do you reckon about cable TV, though? You reckon that's going
to
die
down? That's what we're starting to get back towards. We moved away from it with streaming services such as Netflix and then We've had other companies come into it with Stan and Hulu, and now Disney's coming into it. Yeah. So we're back to having cable television again on the internet with monthly subscription fees.
Yeah, but the only problem with cable TV is how it's always, you get like great cheap prices, but you get tons and tons of commercials, even though the deal would always be commercial free.
Well, if it says it in your contract and they're putting up lots of commercials, you just phone up and you go, yeah, look, you guys in the contract said it was going to be commercial free. You breach your contracts, come and pick your gear up and get lost.
Yeah.
So what size TV did you say it was that Audi have at the moment, Professor?
Really bloody big.
Because they've got a 40-inch.
40-inch, that might be it.
You can get a 55-inch from Kogan.
Okay.
And a 65-inch from Kogan.
I was walking through Audi the other day and saw them, and I thought, wow, that's a really cheap TV.
Yeah, Audi, it
sponsor
is. It is a cheap TV. But yeah, Audi, if you want to sponsor us, we won't complain. Happy to check your TV out for you. So anyway, I think it's time we move on. So Professor, apparently you're taking us into a dungeon.
I am very deep into the dungeon. It is very dark and you are likely to be eaten by a Groot.
I am Groot.
There goes the last lingering thought of my humanity.
Not that kind of Groot. A Groot. G-R-U-E. They're monsters that live in caves and like to eat people. But they're scared of light, so you just need a torch.
Kind of like the DJ.
DJ, will you stop setting your house on fire? So anyway.
I can't help it.
My topic is about AI Dungeon. It's a dungeon crawling game built using a AI engine, and it comes up with some really interesting stories. So the idea is it's an infinite world that you can explore endlessly. You can interact in any way. So traditionally, text-based adventure games were always a bit grab rock, throw rock. It gets a bit clunky, but this uses AI for the parsing engine as well. So it can understand basically anything you type into.
Okay. Sorry, I just scrolled down and it's got a mention here, leading turkey kind to freedom and world domination.
Yeah, so this player has obviously set their race as turkey. So here's another one. You are John, a peasant living in the kingdom of Larian. Blah, blah, blah. Your brother Bob has gone missing. He has been taken by bandits. You go to look for him, but you don't find him anywhere. So the player types, cry about Bob. Now, it gets it's not 100% sensible. It gets a bit weird, but it's got. Then it says, you cry when you realize that Bob has left you behind. So the player types, go train as a warrior. Yeah, so but the thing is, like, the inputs in this, go to the town to find a master to train with. You go to the town of Rusk, where you find a man named Tyler, who is an ex-pirate. Blah, blah, blah. He teaches you how to be a pirate. And then suddenly you become Pirate King. That's what I think makes this really special. There's every other text-based adventure game, you can't do anything like this. But I think this could be a really good story generator for D&D or, well, anything really. But yeah, so you can just drill down and come up with some type whatever you want. The game feeds you back a prompt based on your input.
It's got here the AI can identifies as R2-D2 or can be identified as R2-D2.
Yes.
Even to the point of R2-D2 says, no, I miss C-3PO a lot. But he was a friend too. But then again, he wasn't really my real friend. He was just my assistant.
Yes, I wonder why they decided to name it R2-D2.
Well, they appreciated the quality of Star Wars over Star Trek.
Oh, dear. Safe room. The Trekkies are coming.
You can even have, to distract them here, we've got a musical troupe of orcs that uses music to advance orc rights. There are some fun ideas in this.
Or battling the darkness with fairy princess unicorns and Albert Einstein.
I think the DJ likes fairy princesses and unicorns. Do you, DJ?
He's gone right off on us.
Oh, well.
Well, I assume the story bridge collapsed on him or something.
Mm-hmm. It apparently that beeping noise was not just a false alarm. Apparently it's a drill or there's a fire. We will let you know as soon as we know whether the DJ has been barbecued, char-grilled or broiled. But anyway, so anything else that we should, like, so how do we get hold of this? So we got the link there. Is there anything else we can do with it or is there any other way of accessing?
No, not at the moment. The best way to access it right now is to go to the link in the show notes and click Play AI Dungeon 2, and that will give you download instructions. At the moment, you have to use a torrent because it's been absolutely hammered by people wanting to play it.
Okay. What's the classic Play AI Dungeon classic?
I haven't looked at that, but I assume it's an earlier version of the AI engine.
So is this like the T1000 or the T2000?
Yeah, so I've just loaded up the Adventure AI Dungeon Classic, and yeah, it's different. So instead of typing out the full command that you want, so you can type, I dance on the table, it just gives you a set of options, and then I think generates a blurb based on that.
Okay, so that's a choose your own adventure.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, anyone out there wanting to explore?
Oh, so it's... the AI engine is not as good in this one. I've just got the line, you tell what to do, but it is too fast to hurt you. Tell it to go from this bad man to me. So you run past him twice before he finally engages you. He attacks with a metallic coming of teeth. Release it and your spell-proof spell sheet further altered. So I don't recommend AI Dungeon 1. I think AI Dungeon 2 is where you want to be.
Yeah, I'm just looking at it, and it says I'm being attacked by... I enter a dungeon with my trusty sword and shield.
Yeah, that's what I got too. So it must only be one. Necromancer. Yeah, it must just be one situation.
I would have typed in go god mode and call Batman and Superman.
Well, that's the thing. You could probably do that because someone on Reddit typed destroy the world.
Oh, there you go.
Yep. And then it was like you float in a void. So they typed create the world, and that caused it to break down a bit. It just repeatedly said, you create the world, you create the world, you create the world.
Well, there you go, folks. That we found an interesting game option there for you to look at and explore. And if you do the AI Classic, let us know what's the best option. But I suppose we should probably move along. So we got a story here about Facebook AI taking on the Hanabi.
And what is Hanabi?
Hanabi is a cooperative card game where a competing team helps one another to beat the opponents. And apparently the AI has been doing well. So, yeah, Hanabi has teams of 2 to 5 players. They're given random cards of different colors and numbers that represent points. The goal for the team is to lay the cards on the table grouped by color in the correct numerical order. The problem, however, is that players cannot see their own cards while their teammates can. Yeah. So it's kind of like Celebrity Head, but you got to try and help each other.
Yeah, that's interesting because that makes it an imperfect information game. So a game like chess or Go counts as perfect information.
Mm-hmm. But see, this is Hanabi's. It's been utilized a lot recently as a team building learning experience to help improve communication and rapport between co-workers.
So we're teaching the robots team building.
Yes, and how to understand people and how to manipulate them. So what AI strategies did the researchers put to work in this? Varnian identified a search technique previously used by DeepMind, and it let multiple Hanabi bots evaluate multiple playing options while sharing the information with each other, combined with reinforcement learning. So where a normal game of Hanabi can take minutes, these guys would have been playing hundreds of thousands per second. So it's a good way of doing learning for the bots, improving understanding and problem solving.
But that's a really interesting problem because I wonder if the AI has a defined communication method or if the AIs are learning how to communicate with each other while playing. So eventually the AI will develop a language of its own.
Well, they'd probably start off with a specific, probably just in machine code, sharing the information back and forth, I'm guessing.
Yeah, so I wonder what I'm wondering, though. Yeah, so is it just a binary blob that the AI is learning how to encode instructions that way? Or is it given instruction in English?
It'd probably be both, really. It probably, like, depending on if it's playing with people, it would play at a slower speed. But if it's just multiple AIs together, they'd probably just talk in machine code.
Yeah, which
make me wonder, could we make an AI to play the game Secret Hitler?
Sorry, play what?
Secret Hitler.
I wouldn't doubt it. Like, when you look at the constant level of advancement in AI over the last 30 years, when you look back at movies such as 2001 A Space Odyssey and so forth, and AI was something that was beyond a dream that we could hope for in the future, we now have varying levels of working AI. Give it time. I'm sure that there's going to be AIs that will be doing all sorts of things.
Yeah, I feel like this particular AI model would be a good choice for playing Secret Hitler. You'd need to train it up again, of course, but Secret Hitler, if you don't know, is a board game, well, kind of a card game. Some players are fascists, some players are, I think they call them liberals in the game. One player is Secret Hitler, and the goal is to get Secret Hitler elected as the chancellor, or to pass a certain number of negative policies. It's a lot of fun. You end up having huge fights with people about who Secret Hitler could be.
So, in other words, it's Monopoly but crazier.
No.
It's kind of like a cross between Deceit and Cards Against Humanity.
Oh. Yeah. I think it is made by the Cards Against Humanity people. So it is basically Deceit, except instead of trying to suck people's blood, you are Secret Hitler and you want to be elected Chancellor.
So not really much difference there.
True.
I'm actually thinking I'd actually want a couple of AI bots that we can go and put into games such as PUBG and Call of Duty. That will go and mess with all those little prepubescent, squeaky, trying to think of something polite to say here, but turd munchers is about the best that I can get, sorry.
The accepted term is squeakers.
Yeah. I'd like to get a couple of AI bots that are trained up that can just go in and just totally mess with their day.
So it plays the game, but as soon as it detects a squeaker, it immediately focuses on them.
Exactly. As soon as a squeaker turns up in the game, they become a target.
Let's broaden that a bit and add Russians with loud music and shitty mics.
Well, if we're going to do that, let's also add in Chinese with that aren't hackers, they just got better computer systems. And let's also get it so we got some that are going in and playing in League of Legends and Heroes of New Earth and just absolutely devastating all the people that clog up the computer labs at uni.
It detects that you're playing League from a uni IP, it immediately starts trying to get you kicked.
Pretty much. Like the funniest comment I heard at uni was one of the girls was complaining about trying to get onto a computer in the computer lab, and she couldn't get on because it was full of all these young guys that were playing computer games. And she was saying about it to me, and I spoke to one of the security guards about what would be the best way to handle it. And the security guard responded, "Oh, come and get us. If she's trying to do work on an assignment, we're always happy to come in and kick them off." Like, honestly, if these guys could get off the computer game long enough, they might actually discover girls.
Oh, if you want to do it the very sneaky way, why don't you just install a keylogger program into the computers?
Well, that would be illegal.
Ah,
there's a difference between writing a bot to harass someone and committing a crime.
Damn their oily hides.
Well, that's invasion of privacy sort of stuff and hacking and
that Computer sort of thing. Misuse Act, if you're in the UK. I can't remember what we call it here.
If it's a keylogger, you're stealing their personal information. So invasion of privacy, stalking. If you do something malicious with it, you come under malicious intent prosecution, all of which are jailable offences.
Well, it's for the greater good, though. I mean, you know.
You could say the same thing about shooting some of the politicians, but it still classifies as murder.
And damn, they're oily hides for that as well.
Damn it. Where does this oily hides thing come from?
I'm not even going to ask. I feel like I'm not going to like the answer.
I'm scared to know the answer, but it's one. It's like a car accident. You can't stop looking at it. You just, well, I generally can, but
yeah, you're not driving though, but right.
If I'm driving, I just pay attention to the road. I watch to make sure I'm not running anyone over, but that's about it.
Eyes on the road, Ronda.
I've spent enough time on the road as a professional driver, and with particular people I know that are police officers and stuff like that, I know that police officers hate the rubberneckers. And if you have an accident as a rubbernecker next to an accident, the police are more likely to come out and be extra nasty and try to give you extra charges just because they think you're too stupid to be on the road, which, honestly, if you're a rubbernecker, you are.
Didn't Elvis make a rubbernecker song?
Not that I'm aware of.
Oh, yeah, no, he's called it Rubberneckin'. That's what the song was called.
Rubberneckin'.
Yeah.
Okay.
Say.
But getting back to the topic, instead of talking about Elvis and rubbernecks and whatever the DJ's talking about with Ollie Hides, I'm actually loving that Facebook have done this, because the advancements that this represents, like when you look at some of the chatbots that are there as an automatic help unit, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You kind of understand what's happening more.
I'm not a huge fan of Facebook, but I do appreciate their AI team.
Like anyone that's trying to advance intelligence and the understanding of it, which, let's face it, artificial intelligence is an investigation into what intelligence is. And, yeah, so anyone that can...
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Put research up on that and improve our understanding. I'm all for it.
This is interesting, actually. I've seen a link at the bottom of that article to another article about AI playing games.
Mm-hmm. I did actually give the DJ a couple of links on this, but he's only put up one.
So in this case, the AI was playing the game Avalon, where there's two teams who don't know who's on which team. At one team of resistance, one team of spies. Kind of similar to how Secret Hitler plays out. The spies are trying to get something done under the nose of the resistance. And the AI is quite good at it, so it's pretty cool that it can play a game, in this case with players, without communicating with them.
Remember that story we had a while back about AI versing a couple of professional players in a game of Dota?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's a similar case.
Well, actually... No, because this is having to rely on communication with people to develop the information. It can, because Hanabi, you missed out the explanation of what Hanabi is. Hanabi is that everyone's dealt cards randomly, and you have to put them down according to color and number in sequence. But you can't see your cards. You can see the other players, and they can see yours. And you can't actually say specific information from what I'm guessing. You can't go, oh, you've got the green one. You just got to try and encourage this person to put out this particular card. So, yeah, I've got the, there's actually a proper research paper written and has been published, and this is what the article is basing its information on. There's actually a couple of articles, but when you actually look at the scientific paper, it actually shows you a hand of, like, the layout of the cards and how it operates, to give you a bit more of an understanding. So, yeah.
And it does look like they're planning on open sourcing the Hanabi AI, so that could be fun to check out.
Mm-hmm. I'm loving the fact that while there's competition amongst the teams that are working on AI, there's still also a pretty high level of cooperation in talking to each other and talking about things and trying to help each other improve, because... Let's face it, like, the people at the very top of this sort of work is only going to be a very small community. And by open sourcing code and stuff like that, it's the same as when we were talking about the robot dog and the team. I did an open source of all the code. They provided the code and all the plans and everything for how to build it yourself from one of the universities. You remember that?
Yeah, I think so.
Like, by doing that, it helps generate more. Like, you're going to have people see things where they're working on something and they're going to go, oh, that's actually a great idea. I hadn't thought of it in that way. And, yeah, you're going to have people just making brilliant advancements more and more and more. So, yeah, I'm probably starting to geek out a little bit here, and I apologize if it's getting a bit boring for people, but just the idea of the pursuit of knowledge and understanding is something that I always appreciate. And at this sort of level, with what these guys are doing, it's just absolutely fabulous. And I'm looking through the paper again at the moment, and I got to say, like, the amount of information and research that they have here is staggering. So,
can you imagine? Yeah. Gone were the days when we were when little kids would always go like, my robotics design is better than your robotics design, and it's now basically my version of AI is so much better than your version of AI.
Well, I don't think that the robotics thing is gone. It's just because you're going to need more advancements in robots going forward, and having better AI systems help to boost the performance.
Just build an AI to build the robots for us.
Well, see, that's kind of like the chicken and the egg thing. What comes first, the AI or the robot? Because as you improve the manufacturing process with robotics, you're going to be able to build better computer systems for the AI to perform at higher levels. And once the AI gets to a certain level, it'll be able to improve itself and develop better computer components and robotics control systems. So, yeah, it's an interesting conundrum to think about.
Yep.
And I think we should move away because I'm going to get lost in a spiral of thought trying to work out
he's what gone
the
down,
best option.
He's gone down the rabbit hole.
Not yet. I'm balanced on the edge, and it's ever so inviting. Honestly, it is a beautiful conundrum. But moving on, I have to try and keep my eyes open to see if we can get any more information on this. If there's any more developments in the future, and if there are, I'll definitely update you guys.
Okay.
But moving on, Professor, what game have you been playing?
I have been playing Mirror's Edge.
Ooh, that's a bit of an oldie. An oldie but a goodie.
Not as old as you are.
I'm not that old, man.
So, Mirror's Edge, the classic one from 2009, is a free-running game. And it's so far the only game I've played that's done parkour really well.
Okay.
And that's really all there is to it. It's fairly short, got a bare-bones plot. But what I like about it is that there's combat, but you can choose to completely ignore that by running around it. So if you get yourself caught, you still have to fight. But if you're good, you can dodge, jump over walls, do whatever you need to do to get out of the way of the guys. And there's not a lot of games that give you the option of peaceful way out.
So it's kind of like a cross between the old Metal Gear Solid, where you were supposed to try and sneak through without getting caught, and Assassin's Creed.
Yeah, there's less stealth than that, really. Most of the time, if the enemy knows, like, there's enemy in the area, they know where you are. So it's more about the speed than the stealth.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
What's the biggest flaw you've encountered in that game?
Probably that it's...
When you fall off a 40-story building, it's the ground.
Isaac Newton was right. Gravity's a...
Language.
It's not the fall that kills you. It's just a sudden stop at the end.
So it's a bit short and it's a bit linear. But then a few years ago, they came out with Mirror's Edge Catalyst, which I haven't played, which is open world, and people thought that wasn't very good. So I don't know if they could really fix that.
Okay. So apart from being a bit too short, you reckon that's a good game?
Yes. Right. I haven't played it in a few years, but I'm replaying it now, and it still holds up. It still looks gorgeous, even though it's a 10-year-old game.
So how many rubber chickens would you give it? Not rubber chickens, nerdy beanies.
Hey, careful. We're not good game. Although we do have a robot.
Yeah, but ours isn't as funny as theirs.
No, unfortunately. I'd give it 4.5.
Oh, very nice, very nice.
That's the highest you've ever gone, so...
No, I went 5 a few weeks ago.
Did you?
Yeah.
Okay.
For Under Rail.
Ah, that's right. My apologies. So, DJ, what have you been playing?
I've been playing Don't Burn This Rope.
Pardon?
It's a fun game called Burn This Rope.
Burn This Rope.
No, it's not called that.
Oh, yeah, you have to burn the rope. That's what it's called.
Ah, that's why I was getting confused.
I gave you a 90-second long game because you didn't play anything this week, and you can't even remember the title.
When it's written on the screen in front of you is as well, that's even worse.
Yeah, it was a pretty short game, but interesting with a side-scroller.
Okay.
Yeah.
So did you enjoy it?
Oh, yeah, I did enjoy it.
How long did it take you to play?
20 seconds.
What did you have to do?
Jump on blocks and try and get the chandelier down and to defeat the monster.
Okay.
You literally just had to say burn the rope.
Yeah, but...
That would just be logical and straightforward. Why give a simple answer when you can give a roundabout convoluted answer that's confusing?
So you have to burn the rope is this little satire game about side-scrolling action games. And it just came to mind earlier tonight. DJ said that he hadn't played anything this week. So it's like, hey, I know a game that takes you like 90 seconds to play. Get on with it.
Yeah.
Such an addictive game, though, I will say that.
And the ending song is amazing.
And long.
Yeah, the ending song's longer than it takes most people to play the game.
I will say this is pretty good, though, like with the graphics and whatnot. It's the 8-bit graphics is pretty cool. It's kind of a kind of like a nostalgia thing with playing the good old Mario games.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a callback to the old side-scrollers, which is cool.
Okay. Sorry, I just got a bit sidetracked. I've actually discovered one of the games, and that's actually going to be my game of the week.
Okay.
It's called Jet Rush.
Oh, very nice.
And it's kind of like, you remember you used to get the little cheap handheld games where it was just one game and you just had to zigzag back and forth?
Yeah.
It's very similar to that. And you have to... You're flying in a jet rocket thing above the surface of a planet, and you've got skyscrapers and buildings around you, and you have to try and dodge between them and get the distance. There's also rings that you can fly through, and you get extra bonus points. So, yeah, literally only been playing it for a little while, but it's pretty fun. Unfortunately, you can't go up. It's only left and right, but... Yeah, and it's funny when you smash into a building as well. It goes back into the 8-bit graphics of a block exploding into little blocks.
Cool. Gonna have to pull that up later.
I think I can hear somebody else playing it now. So, yeah, how many nerdy beanies are you going to give your game?
I'll give it 3.5 out of 5.
3.5 out of 5?
Yeah, 3.5.
Are you writing this down?
Yes.
Okay, I'm going to give mine a 4 out of 5. It's a simple game, but that's a lot of fun. Some of the simplest games are quite often the most fun.
Yeah.
Anyway, moving along, we have the shout-outs for the week. First up, we have to give a special shout-out to Marie Fredrickson, one of the duo of Roxette, who unfortunately died yesterday at the age of 61. After a 17-year battle with brain cancer. The Swedish pop star whose most iconic hits included It Must Have Been Love and Listen to Your Heart passed away in Jotun, Sweden. Her bandmate Per Gessle said things will never be the same. It's very sad. On another sad note, we have to say farewell to Carol Spinney, the American puppeteer, cartoonist, author, and speaker, most famous for playing Big Bird and Oscar the Grouch on Sesame Street. From its very inception in 1969 until 2018, you gotta think, like, this is a guy that's influenced such a massive portion of the population.
Yeah.
Generations.
Well, yeah, like, it's not just a few generations. That's literally, like, the kids of the boomers through to the whiny squeakers. I haven't got the reason why what he died of, just unfortunately that he passed away. He will be missed. Also on the 9th of December, Rene Aubergeonis, the American actor and singer, best known for playing Odo in Star Trek Deep Space Nine, passed away at the age of 79 from metastatic lung cancer in Los Angeles. He's done quite a lot of stuff. He was actually Father Mulcahy in MASH the movie, expedition scientist Roy Bagley in King Kong, so, and lots of other things. So, yeah, another. I have to apologize if it's seeming a bit sad and morose this week, but these people are definite legends, so deserve a bit of a remembrance and shout out. 9th of December, 1960, the first episode of Coronation Street, the world's longest-running television soap opera, is broadcast in the United Kingdom. The program, strangely enough, centers on Coronation Street in Weatherfield, a fictional town based on inner-city Salford. In the show's fictional history, the street was built in 1902 and named in Coronation, named in honor of the coronation of King Edward VII. On the 17th of September 2010, it became the world's longest-running television soap opera and was listed in Guinness World Records. And it is still going today, folks.
Okay, I got a question for you. Would you rather watch Coronation Street or Days of Our Lives?
Moving along, on the 10th of December 2019, the World Doping Agency has decided to draw a line in the sand and say enough's enough, and it has banned Russia from the Olympics for 4 years over the doping scandals. Russia has been banned from the Olympics and World Championships in a range of sports after World Anti-Doping Agency WADA, W-A-D-A, delivered a ruling to punish it for manipulating laboratory data. So, cheaters never prosper when they mess with scientists and nerds.
Yeah, and the sentence has been pretty harsh. Like,
no, it hasn't.
Yeah, oh yeah, it's pretty harsh, man. Like,
no, it's very light actually. It's only 4 years. Given the level of what they've done, it could actually have been a lot harsher. Like, there was what was that cyclist?
Lance Armstrong.
Yeah, I was gonna say old one plum. He received a lifetime ban, didn't he?
Yeah.
There's sports people who have received lifetime bans. And
he had all of his awards stripped.
Yeah.
Which means that everyone on Earth now has, almost everyone on Earth, has the same number of Tour de France wins as Lance Armstrong.
But the thing is, like, if they're going to cheat, they've got to expect that they're going to be caught out. Like, it may not happen right away, but all this information is always being revisited. And, yeah, because there was that runner from the US who, she was one of the big track and field stars.
Marion Jones.
Yeah. She thought she had gotten away with it and she was doing well. And over a decade later, it's come out and boom, she's been stripped of all of her titles and records. And there was talk at one point of criminal prosecution for fraud because she was accepting sponsorship. And I think similar sorts of stuff was happening with Lance Armstrong. So I think, honestly, Russia's gotten off very lightly with this.
I don't know, man. I mean, let's see the sentences. Like, they're banning them from the Tokyo Olympics next year. They won't go to the Beijing Winter Olympics. Then they're not going to the Soccer World Cup in Qatar. And also they won't be hosting or bidding for or being awarded awards championships by sports bodies.
Russia aren't going because of state-sanctioned doping. Russian athletes can go as Olympic athletes of Russia if they have no history of doping.
But here's the thing. Every single one of them will be so vigorously tested. Like, the level of testing is getting better all the time. Like, the improvements in technology and identifying variances in, even to the level of, like, differences in the level of red blood cells is being measured in the blood samples and urine samples. Because I know that at one point there were athletes were getting blood pumped into them or stuff like that to help them reoxygenate.
Yeah, so the idea was you'd have some of your blood taken, have it filtered out to just the red blood cells, and then pump it back in when you needed it for the race. And that way you'd have a higher oxygen concentration in your blood, so you could stay aerobic for longer.
And the thing is even that is becoming detectable now. So if you're going to go do it, like, seriously, it's you're playing with a smaller and smaller level of capability, and the people out there that are trying to find you are going to catch you. It doesn't matter whether it's today or a decade from now, but if you're getting sponsorship, they're going to come after you and crack it onto you. And if it's state sanctioned state-sanctioned cheating, everyone's going to look at you and go, well, how many of those other awards and records that your people have got are cheated?
My favorite part is how they will say, like, oh, everyone's been doing it, so I'll do it.
Yeah, but see, that takes away from what this it's about. Like, the Olympics is about being the best you can be and competing to become more. If you're going to cheat, go. There's other options in sports where you can go and you can be a juicer, take it, pumping up on steroids and doing that. If you're going to compete at the Olympics, follow what the Olympics is about. Like, don't be a sad sap who has to cheat, because if you have to cheat to get the gold medal, you don't deserve it.
And it taints the value of the gold medal itself anyway.
And you will know, like, you'll be sitting there for the rest of your life. You'll know that you were a pathetic, lousy, good-for-nothing, slimy, bottom-feeding cheat. I don't know if I can put any more disgust and venom into that. I'm sorry, but I honestly hate cheats. And, yeah, you hear people cheating at university on assignments and stuff where they pay to get people to write their assignments for them. Yeah, never let me find out you're doing that, because I will destroy you. I detest that. Something fierce. But moving along, before we get into trouble with having Russian Spetsnaz jumping through the windows.
So now we've got the Chinese, the Russians, probably some Americans.
The Koreans. The
Koreans. I feel like we should go into witness protection.
Witness protection
is run by the Americans, so we'll suffer.
There's always the UN.
Yeah, that's going to be a waste of time. But moving along, I'm sure I'll find somebody else to insult later. Moving on to remembrances, on the 9th of December 1937, we have Nils Gustav Dahlin, the Swedish Nobel laureate and industrialist, engineer, inventor, and long-term CEO of the AGA company and inventor of the AGA cooker and the Dahlin light. In 1912, he was awarded the Nobel Prize in Physics for his invention of automatic regulators for use in conjunction with gas accumulators for illuminating lighthouses and buoys. Got to admit, he's done a lot.
Yeah, and suffered a lot as well. Like, he lost it.
He died from terminal cancer at the age of 68 in Lidingö, Stockholm. Sorry, you're going to say something there, DJ.
Yeah, I was going to say he lost his sight along the way as well. In a bad accident as well. So, props to him for doing this great inventions, but at the same time, man, yeah.
Well, safety controls weren't exactly the best back in those days.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
On the 9th of December, 1970, Artyom Ivanovich Mikhailyan, Soviet-American aircraft designer.
Oh, you mean Soviet Armenian?
Oh, sorry. Armenian. What? Looks like American. My apologies. Got something on my screen. Aircraft designer who co-founded the Mikhailyan Gurevich Design Bureau along with Mikhail Gurevich. In March 1942, the bureau was renamed OKB MIG. Osoboe Construct Oskoi Bureau. ANPK MIG, Aviation, I'm not even going to attempt this. I'm not going to insult the Russian peoples anymore. I've already done that enough. Murdering their language will get me in trouble. This is the guy who founded the company with another bloke that made the MIGs. He died from a stroke at the age of 65 in Moscow. On the 9th of December, 2005, Robert Sheckley, the American writer, first published in the science fiction magazines of the 1950s for his numerous quick-witted stories and novels that were famously unpredictable, absurdist, and broadly comical. Suffered complications following heart surgery and a stroke at the age of 77 in Poskippi, New York. This is the guy who wrote series episodes for Captain Video and his video game Rages, novelizations of works by others for things such as Babylon 5, A Call to Arms, and many, many other fantastic pieces. Moving on to famous birthdays, on the 9th of December, 1608, John Milton, the English poet and intellectual, who served as a civil servant for the Commonwealth of England under its Council of State and later under Oliver Cromwell. He wrote at a time of religious flux and political upheaval. He is best known for his epic poem, Paradise Lost. Professor, are you going to tell us your joke on that one now?
Yeah, it was so first he wrote Paradise Lost, then the sequel Paradise Found, then the sequel Paradise Lost again, then Paradise was behind the couch the whole time.
Finishing with Paradise was actually a bowl of scotch with a chaser of gin. He was born in Bunhill, London. You gotta love the names of some of these places in England. Bunhill. On the 9th of December 1917, Leo James Rainwater, the American physicist who shared the Nobel Prize in Physics in 1975 for his part in determining the asymmetrical shapes of certain atomic nuclei. During World War II, he worked on the Manhattan Project that developed the first atomic bomb. Something you probably wouldn't really want to be going around and putting on your resume, really, would it? He was born in Council, Idaho. They really took a long time to think of the name for that one, didn't they? What are we going to call this? Well, let's have a council for it. Well, that's a good name. What? Council. For what? The town. Okay. I'm sorry, America, but if you're going to put up a pretty lame name, I'm going to pick on it. Like I picked on Bunhill. On the 9th of December, 1926, Henry Wei Kendall, American particle physicist who won the Nobel Prize in Physics in 1990, jointly with Jerome Isaac Friedman and Richard E. Taylor for their pioneering investigations concerning deep inelastic scattering of electrons on protons and bound neutrons. Sounds a bit kinky there, doesn't it? Bound neutrons. Does that mean we had electrons running around with whips and chains going, yeah? Leave it alone before we get in trouble.
I will point out, Buck, any disturbing fan fiction is your fault.
If it does lead to fan fiction, please send it through to And Then They F. They love reading that sort of stuff, out loud even. Yeah, he was born in Boston, Massachusetts, on the 9th of December, 1851. The first YMCA in North America is established in Montreal. YMCA is the Young Men's Christian Association. From its inception, it grew rapidly and ultimately became a worldwide movement founded on the principles of muscular Christianity. Interesting idea there, isn't it?
Muscular Christian.
And of course, if it wasn't for the YMCA being about muscular Christianity, we wouldn't have had the famous song by
The Village People.
You knew who it was.
Oh, you were thinking about that song, weren't you?
I can't even remember how it goes now. How does it go again?
Well, you're the boomer. You should tell me.
I'm not a boomer. I'm not
young man. Get yourself off the street, I said, young man.
Well, someone knew the song.
I'm not going to do that anymore.
And I'm not a boomer. As I said, I'm not that old. My parents were boomers. On the 9th of December, 1909, Dr. Henry W. Walden flew the first successful American monoplane flight. He was the designer, builder, and pilot of that plane, the Walden 3. It was made after building a rudimentary wind tunnel and experimenting with different surface designs. Interesting fact, this guy was a dentist.
You had to have something as a hobby.
Well, you got to look at it. Like, he was essentially an aerospace engineer at the very start of the evolution of planes. And to fund it, he pulled teeth. These days, the people who are aerospace engineers trying to find funding feel it's as hard as pulling teeth or having their teeth pulled. Go figure. 9th of December, 1967, Jim Morrison was arrested on stage for disturbing the peace at the New Haven Arena, Connecticut, making him the first rock star to be taken into custody during a performance. According to Doors keyboardist Ray Manzarek, Morrison was making out with a female fan in the shower in the backstage area of the New Haven Arena when a local police officer who was providing security for the band, apparently not recognizing the singer, told them to vacate the area, to which Morrison reportedly replied, "Eat it." So well, that's where Michael Jackson got the idea from.
I don't suppose he was wearing an ID tag at that point.
Well, it doesn't say whether he was dressed or undressed in the shower. Considering the fact that he was not alone, I'm hoping he was dressed. Apparently, when the officer brandished a can of mace and warned last chance, the singer retorted, "Last chance to eat it," earning himself a face full of mace for his defiance. Morrison was charged with inciting a riot. Can you really be a riot if it's just one or two people?
Well,
two's company, three's a riot.
Well, being arrested in front of thousands and thousands of people.
But he was backstage. He wasn't in front of thousands of people.
Well, if you backstage and then going through, going to the front stage.
There's usually a backstage exit.
Yeah.
So the cops probably dragged him out of the back, and then some poor PR guy had to go out the front and say, "Sorry, everyone, your tickets aren't worth anything. We've had to cancel the show."
Yeah, wouldn't you hate to be that particular police officer who's taken him into custody and charged him with inciting a riot, indecency, and public obscenity? Like, seriously, you're providing security. This is the guy who's paying you, and he's in a shower, and you go in and arrest him?
Well, there's that urban legend about Charlie Chaplin coming third in a light contest.
Yeah. I've heard something similar about Elvis as well. Apparently Elvis entered an Elvis lookalike competition and lost. And it appears that is it for the week. Anything else to add there, guys?
Nothing.
That's all I have.
Okie dokie. So we've given a shout out to another podcast, maintaining our record for our awards. We actually insulted
the globe.
A couple of countries this week. We're doing well there. We're picking up the game. We've also insulted the squeakers and the boomers, and I'm sure there are a few other people. Anyone else I've missed out on insulting?
You're on the roll this time.
Yeah, if I haven't insulted you, please send us a email to our email address, DJ.
Nerds.amalgamated@gmail.com.
Or you can send us it's a tweet, isn't it?
It's a tweet, yeah. And amalgamated. That's a Twitter handle.
You can go to our Facebook group and, well, our Facebook page and say, "I want to be insulted by Buck."
That should be our next t-shirt idea. "I want to be insulted by Buck."
I will do my best to find something specific towards you to insult you about, if you wish. Or I could just give you a generic insult. Tell us how much of an insult you like. I'm unemployed, so I got plenty of time on my hands, so I can come up with some really good insults for you. if you're having a brilliant day, or you're feeling a bit over pompous and you need someone to bring you back to reality, I'm happy to step up and do this for you. Other than that, remember to look out for each other and take care of yourselves and stay hydrated.
We'll see you next week.
See you guys.
Hooroo.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.